Larry Bird once said that Michael Jordan was God, just disguised in a basketball jersey. MJ was considered not only the best athlete, but had the perfect image. But then a book came out, The Jordan Rules, and the public and media couldn't believe it. Jordan was human. Nearly 3 years later, he retired.
Hey everybody, Dwayne Johnson here to tell you about a new documentary podcast series titled What Really Happened, narrated by award-winning documentary filmmaker Andrew Jenks in coordination with our company, 7 Bucks Productions. This series will look deep into the unknown sides of historic news stories and then ask, what really happened?
Why did he leave the game in his prime? Was it a secret suspension? Did he really want to play minor league baseball? Could any of the conspiracy theories be true? What really happened?
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubick of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and we are the Sports Reporters. This is the Sports Reporters podcast, coming to you actually from international, across America, and I'm down in Haiti at an orphanage I operate, so if occasionally in the background you hear some squealing children or some Haitian music, don't think like you've tuned into the wrong program. It's just the beauty of being able to do podcasts. And we do this, of course, every Monday and Friday, wherever we are. And a lot going on this past week. We'll get to the NFL and the battle going on between Roger Goodell and Jerry Jones and some amazing developments in the NBA and the MVP awards given out in baseball. But it's hard not to start with a story that has gotten everybody from the occasional sports fan to the president of the United States involved. And this is what happens. I live by an expression: nothing good happens when you take a college basketball team 10,000 miles away from home in the middle of a semester to play a game. And that's what UCLA did with Georgia Tech, to go to China to play a season opener there. And as almost everybody knows by now, three of the UCLA players, including LiAngelo Ball, who is one of the three famous Ball brothers, Cody Riley and Jalen Hall being the other two, were accused of and eventually admitted to shoplifting designer sunglasses from three different stores while they were there. They were, by everybody's account, got off amazingly scot-free considering the Chinese justice system and what normally happens. They were never incarcerated. They were basically put in a voluntary house detention, and that house being a very fancy Marriott hotel on a beautiful lake. They stayed there for a few days, longer than the team, when the team went home, and then they came home this week, apologized for what they did, and are currently suspended, quote-unquote, indefinitely from the UCLA team. Indefinitely being the key word, because nobody knows if that's going to be a couple of games, a week, half the semester, the entire year, etc. Gentlemen, what do we think about this?
Well, first of all, Mitch, I tried to broker this before the president got involved, but nobody would accept my terms. I was suggesting a prisoner swap, that we'd send Lonzo Ball over to China and have him do the time and have the three young men come home. Seriously, you are absolutely right. They did get off easy. This was dumb young guy stuff, but it was also dumb young guy criminal stuff and in a foreign country, which elevated it. And here's my problem with this, because it is dumb young guy stuff, whether it's criminal or stuff. I'm trying to keep some balance about this, guys, at a time when there's life and death stuff going on in fraternities all over this country, which has ended up in young men ending up dead. Okay, nobody died here. And that is why I am struggling with the fact that I don't know whether I think that they should lose an entire season because of what they did in those three high-end stores in another country.
I'm not struggling with it, Mike.
I am very upset that UCLA's hesitancy here, in their hesitancy to suspend them for an entire year at a minimum, and that is with the understanding that they will serve some very legitimate and viable community service before they're even thought of that they could play again. Look, this the word one of them used that famous new 21st century explanation for misbehavior, bad decision. No. A bad decision implies that there's some viable alternative. There's no viable alternative to stealing other than not to steal. No. And by the way, there is no word in the English language that would encompass the colossal ignorance and the stupidity that it takes to do what they did, shoplifting in a foreign country. So, no. This is if they don't get a year shot down, then UCLA is disgraceful.
I'm in total agreement with you, Bob. Let's put some context in this. First of all, if it wasn't for the fact that they were a high-profile basketball team on an exchange program over there, and that the president of the United States happened, and what are the odds of this, happened to be in the country at the same time that this was going on. I mean, you want to talk about lightning in a bottle. We wouldn't even be having this discussion about what UCLA should be doing because they wouldn't be home.
That's correct.
They'd be sitting in a detention cell or a jail. Like we have now read many stories of people who have done lesser things than actual stealing. There was a story about a guy who supposedly put his hands on someone in a bar and someone reported him. They called it assault. He's still over there. All right. The Chinese justice system has a 92% prosecution success rate when they charge somebody with a crime. In other words, they don't lose. They don't say, okay, you made a good case, you can go home. And at least months, if not 8, 9, 10 months, or even a year, some have said even it would have been multiple years, could have been where these kids were sitting. So instead of coming home and saying, oh my God, we're back in America, we're free, we got out of a what could have been a horrific situation, yes, just tell us the punishment. I actually heard somebody on, I don't know if it was ESPN or wherever was broadcasting the one of the college basketball games, the Duke Michigan State game, whoever did that, at halftime, one of the announcers said, well, this should be a 2-game suspension. It's a teachable moment. And I'm thinking, you have got to be kidding me here. This is a teachable moment? No. This is something you were supposed to know before you got to college. You don't steal. And let me add another thing. The amount of what they stole, these were not, a box of Raisinets. These were designer sunglasses with values of hundreds of dollars for each of them. In many states in the United States, that would constitute grand larceny or grand theft. You know, the amount of money to get into that category is pretty low. I think, Bobby, in your state, I just happened to look it up in Massachusetts, $250. Mm-hmm. So that could be one pair of those sunglasses. So if you're in the United States, you have committed a felony. Now, am I the only one here who's thinking this is college basketball? If somebody gives you a hamburger improperly, you have to sit out a season. Why is anybody hesitating that these guys should be suspended at least for a year, if not lose their scholarships over this? This was a crime.
Mitch, let me ask you both this, okay? So there is no amount of context or proportion that you're bringing to this from looking at it from this country. There is no amount of understanding, and I'm not, it was criminal and it was stupid. Okay. And again, when I originally heard this story, I thought they went into one store and which is not a mitigating factor. I thought they went into one store and did this. Okay. I didn't know that it had turned into a sunglass crime spree. Okay. And I sat there in amazement the other day as I watched Cody Riley lead off, and he thanked so many people. I said this on MSNBC the other day, guys. He thanked so many people. It was starting to sound like a shoplifting award show, okay? But what price would make you guys happy? What price would these guys have to pay to make you think that justice was served in this matter?
Ask yourself this question. I'm just thinking, I hadn't even thought about this specifically, Mike, till you were just speaking. If they had done the same thing at a store on Rodeo Drive, shoplifted expensive Louis Vuitton sunglasses and were caught, would the three of us, or would I be reacting with the same amount of venom? I like to think the answer is yes.
Mike, I don't know why. What's your... What's your need for context? But Bob's example is perfect.
Mitch, you guys are treating this like the crime of the century. It's not the crime of the century. When I talk about
the crime of the century, a crime, period, a crime. You can't commit a crime and retain your scholarship. Michael, I'll give you a parallel because I'm trying to think in the quote-unquote context that you're talking about. Remember at Ohio State when Terrell Pryor and those guys went out and sold, they didn't steal, they sold some of their jerseys and their awards and something like that, for the tattoo parlor and all that. They missed half a season. Half a season for doing that. Now, that isn't a criminal offense. That's just breaking the NCAA rules. They missed half a season. So you mean to tell me that, and that's a high-profile program with big stars, with all the rest of it, you mean to tell me that committing a felony in a foreign country where you're ambassadors of your school doesn't constitute at least a season?
No, I actually...
I have no problem with that.
No, no.
You know, if they do, they do this thing that I think they're going to do, which is just the non-conference play, so they'll be back in time so they can win the, you know, the Pac-12 or something. That doesn't hurt UCLA. That doesn't really hurt them. To me, it has to be something that really sends a message and really is a sacrifice. And to me, that's a year.
Mitch, do you think a message has not been sent already? This is being treated like the crime of the century. It's not the crime of the century. Is it a crime? Yes. Were they stupid? Yes. Did they get off easy from our government and the Chinese government? Yes. I'm sorry. I may be in the complete minority here, but I have to apologize if my level of outrage about this doesn't match your own.
I'm surprised to hear you say that, Mike. I don't see how you can underplay the idea of the mentality that this took. And, you know, some people have already suggested that this is the ultimate embodiment of the AAU entitlement mentality that's infested this whole sport to start with. And I have no idea if that's a connecting tissue here or not, but I'm throwing it out there because it's been that supposition's been made. I've had it with these kids and the whole AAU thing, and there's no justification for this. It is a crime in any country. And, I mean, no, they didn't rape somebody. They didn't murder anybody. If they'd be, but they got to understand, it's not trivial. It is not trivial. I'm sorry.
When did I say it was? I'm sorry. Back up, Bob. When did I just say it was trivial?
Well, I don't get what you're saying. Then I'm missing something. If you seem to be saying it's not, we all agree it's not the crime of the century, but it is not trivial either.
Bob. So in the sports reporter's justice scale, 35 games is enough, but 25 games wouldn't be enough. So I've got to understand. So
a whole season has to go. There's no right to play. There is no right, no such thing as a right to play.
That's right.
No right to play.
And there's no right to a scholarship.
They do not deserve to play a minute of basketball in this 2017-18 season, period. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, and I not only do I concur with that, but I think that that's actually being fairly lenient because, Mike, I don't. First of all, they're only planning. These guys are all top picks. They're all top 50, ESPN players. Well, actually, Ball is not. I think the other two are. But you know, his dad's plan is 1 year and out and getting to the NBA. They're not planning on staying there for 4 years anyhow. And I think if you take away a year and they say, you know, you want to now. I'm gonna enter something in a second here as to why they're not going to do that, which is even worse. But you don't have a right to that scholarship. A scholarship is somebody paying for you to attend the school, and you're bringing your basketball skills to them. If you have violated the law, the Rodeo Drive example is perfect. I think it's worse when you're an ambassador of the school and you're going over to some other place that you do it over there. I think that's working in reverse here. I think people are sort of minimalizing because it did happen in China. And it's like, we didn't see it. It didn't happen. If it did happen on Rodeo Drive, I think they'd be more upset about it, which I don't know. To me, it's worse when it happens over there. But you don't have the right to that scholarship. They can pull your scholarship. Scholarships have been pulled for fewer, lesser things than that. When players have committed crimes or there's an assault or something like that, their scholarships are out. They're off the team. They're gone. They're no longer with the team, a football team, a basketball team. So I don't know. It's not about 25 or 35. It's about saying this is an extremely serious thing, And we got to set some kind of precedent for the future. And at the very least, you're going to lose this season. I just don't see coming back in this season. And that's not calling it the crime of the century, Michael. It's just a crime. You don't commit felony crimes while you're on scholarship.
Then why are they still in school? If I'm a...
Well, if you can make an argument that they should be kicked out of school.
Explain to me the difference between kicking him off the team and kicking him off the school. You want to throw the book at him? Throw the book at him, Mitch. To kick them out of school.
No, I think you keep them in school, but on the theory that, you know, they're supposed to be getting an education, let's educate them in many ways. And let's make sure that they do some kind of service, whether it's to the school or the community. Let's make and enforce it. Let's see if they can learn something. No, don't send them out to AAU, excuse me, to, you know, Europe or wherever the hell they'd go, or they G League or no. See if they can learn something. I want to keep them around, and then I let them forfeit this year, and let them come back if they want to next year and resume their careers. And boo-hoo if any of them wanted to be a one and done, they can be a two and done.
Bob, Mike, what I was saying before about there's one other element here, and why I don't think they're going to get a year, despite the fact I believe that that's appropriate, is that the school is afraid they're going to transfer. I've read this. And there's talk that they're afraid that if the punishment is too severe, they'll transfer to another school. Now, I don't know how the NCAA, which comes in every time you get an illegal hamburger or you get a job turning sprinklers on that you're not supposed to be betting paid for, whatever, they're right there to tell you that your program is in jeopardy, let alone the kid. I don't know how they could sanction somebody jumping to another school when they committed a felony at that previous school, but that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid that these three guys won't put up with their punishment. And the fact that they even would have the control to do something over that when they could be sitting in a jail cell in China just rubs me the wrong way.
No, I hadn't even thought about that. Hadn't heard about that. But, you know, nothing shocks me in this world of college sports. And you'd like to think the NCAA would enact some kind of jurisdiction to make sure that if they were to transfer, that they would be still there would be a punishment. They certainly if you transfer, well, I don't know whether they'd enact the 1 year sit out rule. This would be the equivalent of the Joe Mixon thing. Yeah, where Joe Mixon never paid any punishment for what he did because he wasn't going to play anyway.
Well, this brings up something that I wanted to ask you guys about anyhow this week. Adam Silver met with the NCAA over the whole one and done thing here. And supposedly what he is thinking about proposing is if you come to college, you stay for 2 years minimum before you can go in the NBA. But an adjunct to that is, or you can come straight from high school into the NBA, which is something the players union, you know, obviously this all goes on between the players union in the end and the commissioner. Given this situation we're talking about with the three guys from UCLA, is that a better scenario than we have right now or worse?
I have been advocating allowing them to come and saying that allow them all to come, and with the understanding that if in fact you are drafted out of high school, you may very well be going right to the G League as a prospect, and you may be living that life for a year or two or three before you're ready, just as the circumstance is in baseball and in hockey. And let's see how many of them want to do that. And your alternative, if you don't want to do that, is they can go to Europe or whatever. But let them come. I because the one and done is having such a deleterious effect on the college game, and. It's absolutely. And no, I totally endorse that they should be allowed to come, but let them understand they may not be it may not be the nirvana they think it is.
I don't think this would stand up to any sort of scrutiny in a court when some kid would say that he is being prevented from earning a living in this country because of arbitrary rules established by the NCAA and the NBA. Bob, when you say it's having a deleterious effect on college, I want them to stay 2 years. I do. I think that would be a better system. I actually think that Silver is right about that. But you got it. Who's suffering here, Bob? Whose brand is being damaged? Is the NCAA and all these schools are not making enough money from college basketball? Who's suffering
it's not that,
here,
Mike? It's not. I think who's the whole feel of being a fan of college sports is changing. Is changed. You're forced to. You're forced at these one and done schools. Yeah, you accept the. Yeah, Duke like they like their championship they got with four freshmen a couple years ago. I understand that. Kentucky liked the one they got. I understand that. Oh, by the way, Kentucky's got one with all this, and then 5,000 guys are in the first round, but they got one championship out of it. I understand that. But the fact is that the whole idea, the fun of college sports for people used to be that you watch kids develop. You had you got to know and root for players and watch them develop a whole career. You know, I'm going to the College of Basketball Hall of Fame this weekend in Kansas City, and they're going to honor names that are very familiar names and very great basketball names, such as Duncan, Stockton, Mount, Williams, Jay Williams, and Paul Silas. And all of them, of course, were four-year players at their schools. Oh no, except for Jay Williams, but I guess. But point being, you know, that's the way it was, and it was better. It was. I know. I'm just thinking, saying, Mike, I can't say it anymore. And I like to think you know it was better. You can't buy. I cannot believe that you, Michael Lupica, are buying into the idea that it wasn't better the other way. It's something is missing in college basketball, and when you combine that absurd 50-year transfer rule, the way it's being implemented with the one and done, it really has a deleterious effect on the rooting ability.
Bob, a more deleterious effect on college basketball is a regular season that becomes less and less meaningful. To me, this is a sport that, as much as I love it and you love it, and as much time as Mitch has spent around it as well. Okay, what the problem is that it only truly comes alive in the eyes of the country over 19 days in March and April. That's a much bigger problem.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I know that you are correct, but that is it's so phony. It's so wrong. And I say this, and people say, oh, it doesn't matter. And there's a countless games in the course of a season that people walked out of that gym. They just had a great conference game. Usually it's that. And had a great conference game. And they were rewarded for their fandom. Just because in the big picture, in the talk show world, that has elevated the March Madness into something outside, that it simply isn't true that what they're saying that doesn't matter, that people aren't that conference seasons don't matter, that people aren't enjoying the games in their individual context. Everything doesn't always have to be about the big picture. It's one of the problems of modern sport. People worry too much about the big picture and not about the micromanaging of the game that you're watching this very night, which could be very enjoyable no matter what sport we're talking about. I'm sorry. It's a propaganda thing.
I'll tell you another thing. I agree that, having covered college basketball in a conference here, you know, that's a big conference, Big Ten, for many, many years. The Michigan State basketball game, it doesn't matter if either one of them is going to be highly seeded in the tournament. It's always a huge, two games on the season. Same thing with Ohio State when Michigan plays Duke or Michigan State plays Duke, as they did a couple days ago early on in the season. It's a huge event. So there are moments in the regular season that warrant attention, even though I think it's the largesse of the tournament, not the uselessness of the regular season. It's just the tournament has become such a big betting thing and a national, everyone makes their pools and all the rest. There's nothing in a regular season, any regular season, that could counterbalance that. But I will answer what you said, Mike, about, well, what's deleterious about it? Here's another thing that we haven't mentioned. Coaches are so desperate to get the player that can help them in one season, because they're only going to hang on to players for one season, that it all becomes a race to chase after the top 25 recruits in the country. And you know what happens when there's pressure for that. You look the other way. You hear something bad and you say, well, we can cover that up for a year. You don't worry about character issues as much. You say, well, I'm going to be there for a year. Your whole philosophy of coaching changes because you basically know the best players you're going to have are only going to be there for a year. If you know they're going to be there for two, even though two is not four, as Bob would prefer, two is much different. You can bring a player along. We've all observed that the biggest jumps that most college players make is between their freshman and sophomore years. And knowing that you're going to have guys for 2 years, you may be able to say, okay, I'll bring this guy. He's a two-year project, but he's worth investing in. And some of that ridiculous pressure to chase after the same exact kids might be ameliorated. Not to mention the fact that, as Bob says, you know, you can actually look forward to somebody coming back for a season. You know, Miles Bridges is being touted as this like national hero because he chose to actually return to Michigan State when he could have gone as a lottery pick in the NBA, and it was unthinkable. And he said, well, I kind of like it here. I like college basketball. And I was like, wow, we've never heard of this before. If that were the norm again, then, you know, I think it would be all right. And I'm not sure it's illegal, Mike. I'm not sure that it wouldn't stand up to a challenge. The NFL has that, you know, with you have to be of a certain age or a certain amount of years in college before you can. You can't jump out of your freshman year in the NFL unless you're over a certain age. So I think that could probably stand the scrutiny of a legal test. A bigger question is what happens when you start getting high school players more and more straight into the NBA. We just got done talking about, you know, what silly mistakes young people make. Imagine the silly mistakes that a 17-year-old literally could be 17 and he's got a contract for, you know, $10 million. You're inviting a lot of other potential mistakes as well.
I sometimes, Mitch, I and Bob, I lie awake at night worrying that some of the most powerful people in all of sports, the godlike college basketball coaches, are struggling now with this system and how much of a burden it puts on them. You know who I'm more worried about? The players. Now, we can have a fine debate about whether they will be better served by spending 2 years in college than one. I actually believe that's true. But you know what? They are the least compensated attractions in all of sports. College star athletes, okay? And I know this makes Ryan's head explode because room and board is supposed to be like some sort of windfall for these kids. They are the least compensated star attractions in all of sports. The coaches get rich. The schools get rich. The NCAA gets rich. Television networks make a fortune off this sport at tournament time, okay? And what I'm more concerned about is what helps the kids who are worthy of it make as much money as they can. And this system seems to be working for them. Would I embrace Adam Silver's idea? Yeah, I actually would. But I can understand how a kid who comes and has to spend 1 year in college is thinking, okay, I'm out of here so I can go make a living.
Right, but now that kid can do that right out of high school and doesn't even have to go through the facade of working essentially for free for a year. I'm good enough to be in the NBA, but I have to go here to college. I'm not getting paid for college. The very things that you're talking about that engender those kind of resentment feelings on the part of the players, and perhaps justifiably so, that would be lifted by this plan. You're that good in high school, and you are only interested in making money for playing basketball. You're not interested in the education or the college experience. Fine. You now have the option to go. So nothing to complain about. And therefore, the players that do go to college, they are making a conscious choice, either a conscious choice to go to college, or they found out that they weren't as good as they thought they were. And so they, you know, they can't get into the NBA. So they go to college. I think that's why it's a good plan. It eliminates that very feeling that you're talking about I should be getting paid while I'm here. And I'm only here basically putting in my time because I'm not allowed to go where I could be getting paid. Be curious to see what percentage of kids actually end up leaving and how, you know, all of a sudden, if you didn't have the Miles Bridgeses or the Marvin Bagleys or any of these guys, they were straight in the NBA and they weren't in the college game anymore. What would that be like? Like LeBron James, you know, never played college, but we don't know what LeBron James might have been in college and never had the opportunity.
There is an ongoing reality series going on in the NFL right now that the likes of which I cannot remember since Pete Rozelle was at war with Al Davis in another time in this sport when Rozelle wouldn't let Al tour the Raiders like they were the Ice Capades up and down the California coast. Jerry Jones is out to get Roger Goodell. I don't know if he has enough support with his other owners because he is clearly, and I have a feeling it's about more than Ezekiel Elliott, but this is as much of a blood feud at the highest level of this sport as I can remember since Rozelle and Davis.
Did you read that? I think it was the Outside the Lines report in ESPN where Jerry Jones, according to this report, Jerry Jones thought he had an arrangement with Goodell that Ezekiel Elliott would not be charged with anything. And Jerry Jones was one of the 32 owners who unanimously said, let's move to the compensation committee to determine Roger Goodell's new contract. You know, it's like passing it from the House to the Senate. And then 3 months later, Jerry Jones gets a phone call from Goodell. Goodell says, I'm gonna charge Ezekiel Elliott for sexual assault. I can't not do it. And according to this report, that's when Jerry Jones said, I will kill you, in so many words. Apparently, if you believe the sentence, he said, you think what Robert Kraft did to you in Deflategate was bad? Robert Kraft is a pussy. That's the word that they're being quoted on. Robert Kraft is a pussy compared to what I'm going to bring, you know, the hell and the damn fire. And if that's really what's going on here, you're right, Mike. This is a soap opera. This is Dallas, you know, the TV show at 10 o'clock at night back in the old days. And it's nasty. I don't know. Bob, do you think that one owner, even if that owner is Jerry Jones, can derail a commissioner?
Well, now there's a story, a very lengthy story, which I didn't even get a chance to finish. I have to read it in sections in an ESPN.com, in a magazine, excuse me, about how there's other owners, there's other issues that are now, we are now learning that we had no idea were issues about the scope of the league office and the people that Goodell hired and how much they're being paid and whether or not their jobs are worthwhile or being done well at all. And that there are owners in addition to Jerry Jones who have questioned some of this, and there's other things, blah, 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 blah. This has all come, you know, suddenly, what is this? Who ever heard about this? So there's a lot bubbling, but I do think that we wouldn't be having this conversation if Goodell had not adjudicated it in the manner he did with the Ezekiel Elliott thing. I don't know how anybody can argue otherwise. This is, and isn't it interesting? And let me just say one more thing. Isn't it interesting that the similarity between the adjudication of Ezekiel Elliott and the farce that was Deflategate is that indeed Bob Kraft said he was promised one thing and by Goodell that did not materialize, as Jerry Jones is claiming now as well.
Ezekiel Elliott in this dispute, this conflagration, is the Mrs. O'Leary's cow. I get that. Okay. This pushed Jones to do the things he's done. But to me, the if you're choosing upsides here, okay, and you guys have heard me talk about this before, and I have no personal animosity towards Roger Goodell. I think Roger Goodell is a good guy. I thought his father, a United States senator, was a good guy who stood up against the Vietnam War as a Republican in the 1960s. I think he's done well in the one thing that matters to these owners most. He has helped them make more money. And could somebody else have done that? Absolutely. But if I'm deciding, if I'm looking at the, I know I'm not supposed to look at the big picture today, but if I'm looking at the big picture, okay, I'd rather have Jerry Jones in the National Football League than Roger Goodell.
Well, he's expendable in the big picture. He really is. I mean, heck, I totally agree with you. Now, I'm not going to agree with the first part of your thing. I don't want Jerry Jones around. I'm tired of Jerry Jones. But certainly the idea of that there isn't someone else who could fulfill the role of Roger Goodell for whatever, however much less money, that we know that's got to be true. So, yeah, he's expendable. At least to me, he is.
Well, I agree that I agree that Goodell has done a lot of things that make you think there's got to be somebody who can handle this job better, although some of it may be the job. It may be just one of those things where it doesn't matter who's in there. They're going to end up looking stupid because they're given powers that then are challenged legally. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of what's going on with Goodell, as we've discussed before, is a result of the agreement with the players union that gave him the power and then the players running to their...
Adam Silver doesn't look stupid. Rob Manfred doesn't look stupid.
Well, I'm not sure... I'm not sure that they have the same kind of powers, unilateral powers that were granted to Roger Goodell. I'd have to look at their contracts. I'm just saying I've seen a pattern between with everything that Goodell does that he ends up looking foolhardy with. A lot of it comes from the fact that he has the power to do it, but nobody really wants him to have the power to do it. And the players challenge him in court and everything goes back and forth. But I will say this about it. I could care less if Roger Goodell's the commissioner or somebody else is the commissioner. When I heard that Goodell wanted a private plane for life and health insurance for life, and in addition to the $50 million a year that he gets earned, I don't have a lot of sympathy or empathy for Roger Roger Goodell's employment. This after all is running a football league here. You know, you're not curing cancer for the rest of the world. But I will say this, Mike. If Jerry Jones was all in for Roger Goodell and he's fine, yeah, let's give him the money, let's have him. And then the one thing that turned him was because Roger Goodell decided that he needed to charge Ezekiel Elliott with sexual assault charges, which is the correct decision. I don't care what he promised Jerry Jones before. That's the correct decision. What Ezekiel Elliott did, he should be being charged for and he should be being suspended for. Then I don't side with Jerry Jones on this. You know, there may be other issues on Goodell, but if that's the only thing, this is a blood feud over, you told me my star player wasn't going to get suspended and now he is. Do you feel that that's justification for what Jerry Jones is trying to make happen?
No, I don't know how many times we've discussed Goodell and Ezekiel Elliott on this podcast, and I have made it perfectly clear. Mm-hmm. If you're going to err on any side of this, you err on excessive punishment when the charge is domestic violence or domestic abuse, especially at this time in America with a story a day about a woman either being abused or harassed. I get all that. But I do believe there is more going on here than just Ezekiel Elliott between him and Goodell. And I think a lot of this has to do, and I don't know who leaked the stuff about Goodell's demands, but they're obscene. And anybody who thinks that enhances the shield and the brand of the National Football League, that they've got a commissioner who thinks he's worth $50 million a year and a private plane for life, anybody who thinks that's a good thing for the NFL needs to be drug tested.
Well, let's talk about the actual football for a second here, because the Cowboys do find themselves in a home game against the Eagles, which is, it's a Sunday night game. It's not an exaggeration for me to say this is it for the Cowboys. I mean, this is their season. If they drop this, they're not winning, obviously, their own division, and they're in a dogfight with a bunch of other teams, number of which have the tiebreaker against them in the wild card. So the game is in Dallas. Obviously, there's no Ezekiel Elliott playing. Sean Lee isn't playing. The left tackle, Tyron Smith, isn't going to play, and Philly's coming off a bye. What do we think of this game?
Doesn't bode well, does it? No, this is clearly the game that, if they're even going to have a remote chance of getting the second wild card, they're not winning the division, even if they win this game. I'm sorry. So, no, this is an important game for them, obviously. And I have a gut, just a gut feeling they'll show up and play well, but in vain, but play well.
This is a wonderful opportunity for the Eagles, I think. Not that I think they're going to lose the NFC East if they lose this game. No, this is a great showcase for the Eagles in front of the country for them to say, hey, I know you're talking about Brady still. I know you're talking about this team and that team. Take a look at us, because we are as much of an attraction right now in this sport. And they get the big stage and the big spotlight now. And to me, that's a great thing as the NFL tries to build some momentum over the second half of the season, because the country is going to get a great look at Carson Wentz on Sunday night. They're going to get a great look at the way the Eagles have been playing on both sides of the ball. To me, we talked about this the other day. The Rams and the Eagles are great stories. Cam Newton's resurgence in Carolina, it's a great story. The fact that the Falcons haven't played themselves, they got an interesting game on Sunday as well. The fact that they have not gotten the attention they deserve, but there's still time. I want the country to say, holy crap, look at the Eagles.
Yeah, well, they'll have their moment on Sunday night. For sure, and the two teams that you mentioned, have some pretty interesting games as well coming up this weekend. The Rams and Atlanta, at Seattle. These are some pretty good ones here. I mean, they may not be the marquee games some of the earlier parts of the year, but we'll be able to find out a lot about who these teams are here. By the way, Dallas would be 5-5. If they lose this game, 500 point after 10 games of the season. I think you're right, Bob. They're not winning the division anyhow, but that makes the wild card pretty tenuous there.
Now, in the NBA, attention, and rightfully so, has been focused on the Boston Celtics, winners of 14 straight games after dropping their first two, and in the absence of the marquee free agent, Gordon Hayward. But there's something else going on in the East and in their own backyard. at 8-6, which is not a great record, but for these teams in recent years, it's a very good record, particularly. The Philadelphia 76ers are 8-6.
What?
The New York Knicks are 8-6.
What?
Yes. And the most significant individual accomplishment of this past week of basketball was Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers dropping 46 points on the Lakers in Los Angeles. And it's very important to have, I think, to have the Sixers back, and even more important for the league to have the Knicks as a team that people can focus on, pro or con. And I will always, and I don't think I'll get much argument from Mr. Lupik on this one. Despite all the 50s success of the 60s and the Celtics, the most important single team in the history of the NBA in creating the NBA that we know today and the interest in the NBA that we know today was the 1969-70 New York Knicks.
Yep.
And that team is the most significant team that has ever been in this league. They focused attention on a league that was not there before and which has never gone away. And so I think it's very important for the Knicks to provide a competition and be somebody that people can either love or hate in this league. But there's nothing like having a good team in New York.
A legendary Philadelphia sports writer, George Quesada, once talked about the monster of Madison Square Garden, which I'm paraphrasing, Bobby. You know the exact line.
It lives, of course,
in the throats of 19,000 people. And he was talking about the old Garden, okay?
Yeah.
The Knicks in the last 17 years have won one playoff series. This and every commissioner from Stern to Silver said, hey, listen, our sport is stronger than that. We don't need New York. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They don't need the Knicks to be great. They need them to be relevant. And now they are building a future around a unique player named Kristaps Porzingis. And Mitch and Bob, the Garden loves this kid. The Garden loves this kid and has come to him in a way that I can't remember them coming to any Knick. And that includes Patrick Ewing, because they see this kid as a way out of this. And, you know, I came to the newspaper business in New York covering the Knicks in the 1970s. And Mitch and Bob, I know what important capitals of the sport Philadelphia and Madison Square Garden are. And of all the other stuff that has happened so far in this season, just this little bit of a rising from these two teams has been tremendous if you love pro basketball.
What's interesting to me about Porzingis is he's a Latvian who is more American.
The Latvian Mamba.
He is a Latvian with a complete and utter total understanding of the American psyche and the psyche of the New York sports fan, and handles himself in a veteran savvy way to go along with his freakish talent at 7'3".
I agree that Philly and New York, Boston, you know, you got to have the East relevant in NBA basketball. And it's all well and good that Oklahoma City has a good team or San Antonio has a good team. But for the years when Philly and Boston, you know, the only Boston had a team at all, and Philly and New York were totally irrelevant. It's not good. It's not good when the Lakers were irrelevant. So we have a season here now where the Lakers, at least, are in the news. They're not very good. And Philly and New York are on the rise. Boston's already great. Plus, you still have the Oklahoma City, the Clevelands, and teams like that are up there. So it's a good time for the NBA. All right, guys, before we get to our parting shots, let me tell all our folks listening out there, you may have tried meal kits before. 30 minutes turned to 60 minutes, and all of a sudden you realize you're actually paying and doing all the work. We've done it. That ended for me, for us. I know Mike dined on it. This week, after we tried Freshly. Now, some of you may be asking, what is Freshly? Well, Freshly is a weekly prepared meal service that delivers fresh, never frozen, all natural meals developed by their team of chefs and nutritionists. They're fully cooked, so all you have to do is just heat them up. Even I can do that. Each meal is ready to eat in only 3 minutes. So no more worrying about what's for dinner, no shopping, no chopping, no cleanup, but also no artificial ingredients, preservatives, or added sugars. Freshly is always fresh, never frozen, fully cooked, prepared meals. They're ready to eat in 3 minutes, 100% all natural, no artificial flavors or preservatives, no refined sugars, no gluten. They are developed by chefs and nutritionists, and they're a healthier option for everyday eating that also happen to taste really good. And best part about Freshly, doesn't take a lot of time to prepare or clean up. Just heat up the meals, and you have a dinner that doesn't end with dishes. So here's what you can do. You can try Freshly today and get $40 off your first to deliveries. You just go to freshly.com/sportsreporters, freshly.com/sportsreporters, and you get 6 meals for only $39 for 2 weeks. It's Freshly's best offer yet, only valid for a limited time. So head to freshly.com/sportsreporters, or you can enter code sportsreporters at checkout at their website. Shipping is always free. Time for our parting shots, and Bob Ryan leads off.
Now, what team extends its winning streak to 14 consecutive games by defeating the defending world champions while shooting 0.329 from the floor in the course of so doing? Why, that team would be the red-hot Boston Celtics. I will repeat that. They beat the Warriors while shooting 33% from the floor. They had a 19-0 run in the third quarter, so a couple of shots did find their way into the basket. This team has captured the hearts and minds of the sports fans of Boston while not being gaudy. It's not about offense. It's about grit and determination, and people like Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, who at one point in this game, now pay attention to this, you nerd Knicks, was scoreless, but his team was plus 15 while he was on the floor. I'll repeat that. The man was scoreless, and his team was up 15 points with him on the floor. So he's doing something other than scoring. Seth Curry was 3 for 14. Klay Thompson was 5 for 18. That's 8 for 32. Oh, and by the way, Kyrie Irving was 4 for 16, so the three great shooters on the floor were 12 for 48. But it was a rousing spectacle. Now, what does this all mean in the big picture? Are the Celtics back? Are they going to dethrone the Cavaliers? No, not necessarily. The Cavaliers will straighten themselves out. But there is a team in Boston that has won 14 straight, doesn't have to score 100 points to do it, and is somebody that when they come your way, you might want to check out.
There's always a lot going on in sports, and there has been a lot going on in the NBA, as Bob just said, in less than the first quarter of the season, from Porzingis at the Garden to the way the 76ers have been playing, and pretty much there's a good story, it seems, all across the country. So it might have gotten lost a little bit. Hang in here, Ryan. Now listen to this. That the Houston Rockets on Thursday night scored, wait for it, 90 points in the first half against the Suns. 90. Chris Paul came back from an injury and only played 21 minutes, but that was plenty enough to move the Rockets' record to 12-4 and once again show us the possibilities of what the Rockets might look like in the spring. For now, we just know what they look like Thursday. 45 in the first quarter, 45 more in the second quarter. Who knows what things will look like in the West by the end of the regular season? Right now, though, if you're looking at the Rockets and the Warriors, the sides look very much as if they're even.
Draymond Green doesn't like the word owner. In what's become a national public feud, he told a panel that Dallas Mavericks owner, Mark Cuban, can never understand how he, Green, a young black man, feels when he hears that word. You remember that Green said we should stop using the word owner, and Cuban, the billionaire owner, questioned whether Green understood the difference between equity and brand. Back and forth it went. Personally, I think both of them are making a mountain out of a word hill. When people work for a bakery, they refer to the boss as the owner. When they work for a factory, they might say foreman. When they work for a tech company, it might be founder or CEO or, again, the owner. I appreciate Green's sentiments, and perhaps I can never understand his feelings either, I admit that. But he's never been owned by anyone, and he knows he isn't now. Invoking historic pain when you're earning more than 99% of the population, white, black, and otherwise, could actually minimize the seriousness of that terrible chapter in American history. So, here's an idea. Green can refer to the guys who own the franchise he works for as, quote, the team owners, not my owners. There, problem solved. In a world where we grapple with serious debates, we shouldn't be distracted by word ones. That's going to wrap it up for today, and we thank you for joining us on this Friday. We will be back on Monday, as we normally are, and there's going to be a heck of a lot to talk about with the football weekend coming up, college football, and all the rest. We do this every Monday and Friday, so please check us out or subscribe if you want to just get notified of it. Go to Apple Podcasts, iTunes Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. If you like it, you can leave a review for us, and we always appreciate that, and we look forward to hearing your comments. Until we see you on Monday, for Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific weekend.